Hello, this is Daniel Horowitz, and I'm in New York City, and it's 1:08 p.m. on August 8th, 2022, and I'm here with Anna Padgett on Zoom for the Education Narratives Project, and this is our seventh phase. And Anna, would you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Anna Padgett, and I'm excited to be back for my seventh interview with y'all. I'm an early childhood teacher in the city.
I just wanted to start with, where are you right now? Because we're on Zoom, so we're in different places.
I am in the East Village of Manhattan.
I remember from I had a chance to listen to your previous interviews, and I remember that you had moved. So I wanted to ask you about that.
Yeah, I've had these interviews in at least three locations in the city. When we first started, I was in Bed-Stuy, where I lived for 5 years. And then in the height of the pandemic, which included for me a massive pay cut at my previous job, which was very ill-timed because I was in the midst of trying to buy a an affordable apartment. This where I am now, which had been like I had been working on that for about 3 years. This is it's an H, it's called an HDFC apartment, and it's a program for maintaining some middle income people in New York City. So anyway, but they're very hard to find these apartments, and it was like a literally I was coming after this apartment for over 3 years, and right when it was about to wrap up, my closing I had a closing date. My school that I was in when the pandemic started implemented a 25% pay cut on just some of the teachers, which included me. So the point is that, and that actually was August 6th, 2020, which was really a traumatic day because it was a trauma. Everyone was in trauma zone, of course, at that time for many reasons. And then this was like a major personal trauma for me. And basically, I didn't know if I was going to be able to continue with the apartment, but I did. I was able to, luckily, with some finagling. And so the first time I did an interview, I was there. I don't know how many interviews I did there, but then I was living in Williamsburg because this apartment where I live, where I am now, was really a mess. Like it, I brought my daughter here. I mean, it was really like a crime scene. I brought my daughter here, and she was like, she's 15 now, so maybe she was 13 when she saw it. And I was like, don't worry, it's not gonna look like this because it was really scary in here. It was like actually scary. So anyway, it needed a lot of work, and so I was so lucky. I had a friend whose apartment in Williamsburg was empty. Usually they rent it out, but it was pandemic and there was all this Williamsburg construction going on. And anyway, they let me live there for free while I was having this apartment worked on, which was an incredible gift. So the point is that at least a couple of my interviews were there. And then now I'm here in this apartment. And it's actually crazy to think that this whole journey has taken place during the pandemic, as well as all of teaching in the pandemic. And anyway, so here I am now, and yeah, that's where I am in the East Village at this apartment that I own. Yeah.
Well, that's amazing that
Yeah.
it happened that you
It
own
is.
an
It's
apartment.
actually a miracle. It was a total miracle. I mean, there was a ton of work, but it was really very lucky. And I honestly, it's I still marvel at the fact that I did all that during this completely insane time. So I'm happy about it.
Well, I'm curious about that because a lot of a we've been talking about in sort of my other interviews, it's just sort of the lasting nature of the pandemic. Like, how does the pandemic, how do you feel like your life interacts with the pandemic now?
I mean, I still feel like it's very present for me. I was just, well, first of all, just yesterday, I was just on a trip to Mexico for 2 weeks. I went and I studied. I stayed with a friend who is Mexican, who is from Mexico City. I stayed with her for a week and studied Spanish. And then I went to the beach with my boyfriend for a week. And I just got back yesterday, and it was like kind of a really hard travel day. And I didn't wake up until like 1 p.m. And the point is that I was lying around in bed, staring at the ceiling and reading random articles. And I read the one about like the vision, like someone in the New York Times saying, you know, what school should look like next year. And I mean, it's total, I don't know. And I'm about to go back, you know, in a couple of weeks, and it's certainly on my mind, on my mind, like what's the plan? Like what are we doing? And you know, it was also very interesting to be in Mexico because people are so much more diligent there still, compared to here. And everyone, anyways, it was tons of people there had the virus when I was there. I was testing myself constantly because I was meeting my boyfriend at the beach, and I was like, I didn't want to have him fly from New York, and I didn't want to go there if I was going to get sick. And I mean, it was very much a part of my life. I was like, if I get sick here, where am I going to go? Because my friend from there and her husband were going to leave and come back here, and I didn't have anywhere to stay there. And you know, so I was just like constantly. It's a huge part of, to me, I mean, I don't know. But then again, like I came back and I went to the gym yesterday after I finally got out of bed at like 5. And you know, I'm the only person at the gym who masks. So I don't know what the hell's going on, you know. And but I was talking also to my friend. I'm like, so if, as this New York Times article was recommending, I mean, well, masks were not required at the end of last year. But it was very clear for me that I was going to keep masking. And there were many kids for whom that was true as well. I mean, I teach kindergarten, so it's not like it was their decision, it was their grown-ups' decision. And I kept masking. But now, after this break, and everyone in America seems to feel like it's over, I'm wondering like, what's going to happen? Like, I work at a school that is a private school. So last year was my first year at the school. So, and largely as a result of the pay cut, which then was reversed several months later, but it was such a traumatic event for me. And so deeply disillusioning about that institution where I was previously, you know, that was the only way that they had come up with to address their financial realities was to kind of localize this pay cut on one division of a school. I just was like, you know, no, definitely not. So now I'm in a school, the educational approach of which is much less aligned with how I prefer to teach, but I do feel respected as a human there, which, you know, is kind of the basic, you have to have that obviously before you do anything else. The point is, my school where I am now had a lot of was super protective of its employees in the peak pandemic, and got a lot of blowback, like a lot of aggressive blowback from its parent community. And so my feeling last year, having come in the second year of the pandemic, was that they were very they tread very lightly among the parents about what they would ask them to do because they were basically afraid of the level of press hysteria that had ensued from their initially very conservative and protective approach. So I'm anticipating that there's going to be very little in place, to be honest. And so what does that, yeah, I don't know what, because I don't really know that I'm going to want to go and be in the classroom unmasked with a bunch of 25-year-olds who are unmasked. I mean, because people are still getting sick. If you know, and even though I'm not terrified of going to the hospital or anything, like as a teacher, as you know, it's very, very complicated if you don't go into work for 10 days. It's like really, it's not like you can do it from your house if your kids are in the classroom. You've got to write out all these. It's just like a whole ordeal. You can't stop working is the point. So it's really better not to get, if you, you know, not that, you know, fear of the virus aside, which is not how I feel anymore. It's just an ordeal. So I'm a little leery about what that's going to look like. And then emotionally at the same time, it was so significant to be masked among young children. And, you know, developmentally, I fully agree that it's really, really hard on them, although they were very resilient, you know, but you could see some behavioral stuff, like kids who, I remember talking about this last time, kids who, for example, who were very impulsive physically, and which is very common when you're 5 years old, but they couldn't really see the other kids' faces to like read the cues in a way, you know, like, so literally I'm going to be more impulsive towards you and possibly having more problems because I can't see on your face that you don't like what I'm doing to you. So, you know, I would really, I remember feeling also like, especially last year, because it was a new school and I was nervous, you know, you convey so much with your face. So my point is, if they're all going to be masked, if I'm not comfortable being unmasked, what's my plan? Because, you know, it's much easier to teach and to build trust when you don't have a mask on, you know, when they can see your face. But I also, I'm not going to not wear it. I mean, the way that I feel right now, I'm going to wear it. So I don't know. I'm just wondering. This thing that I read yesterday was also advocating for, if a kid gets sick, rather than having these rules, which we had last year, you know, where it was, I don't remember how many days it was because it was always changing, but there's a certain amount of days from your first symptoms when you could come back, right? And this article was advocating for, let's say that was that number of days was 5 before. I don't remember. It might have been 7. I can't remember. Moving it to 3. So moving it to 3 days from when you first have symptoms. If you don't have any symptoms, you can come back after the 3rd day, whether you're testing positive or not. And I just think about how, as an early childhood teacher, you know, kids are constantly sent to school with symptoms. Like, COVID or not COVID, parents don't want to deal. Like, here, you deal. And so then as a teacher, obviously you're put in this shitty position of either just sucking it up and dealing with it, which is never really that good of a choice, but sometimes I do it because I just literally don't want to talk to that parent, you know, because of what they're like. Or you have to make a big production and they have to come get the whatever, which I certainly did last year. But the point is that, you know, I just send the kid back after 3 days, unless they're symptomatic, just doesn't sound very thoughtful to me. It doesn't sound very caring, you know. And of course, you know, the article was written by someone from the Harvard School of Public Health or whatever, and of course it's not a problem for the children, you know. Not all the children in the world, obviously, but the ones that I've known have all been completely fine. But it is a big deal for us as teachers in the classroom, obviously. And not all of us teachers are 25, you know, I'm 53. And anyway, so I feel that it's very much so a part of my life. My daughter also, who is 15, is at camp this summer and was sent home from camp because she got COVID. And she was tested, you know, she tested before she went up there. She tested on arrival. No one around her had COVID. But then like 2 days later, they tested her group again because they were going to go on this like canoe trip for like 9 days. And she was found to have COVID. So she was sent home. So yeah, it's still going on. You know, I don't know. I mean, I don't really, to answer your question, to what extent is it a part of my life? It's still a big part of my life. Yeah. I mean, I had used up all my COVID tests when I was down in Mexico in the first week. Because literally everyone around us had, when I was in the city, was getting COVID. My friends that I was staying with had just gotten over it. My friend's mom, got sick with it while we were there. She was very stressed because she's got a lot of respiratory issues. And I kept testing myself because I wasn't really feeling that good. And, you know, my boyfriend was coming down and I was like, you've got to bring more COVID tests when you come. Anyway, yeah, it's still going on. I think I feel like I answered your question.
Well, I'm curious, you mentioned this New York Times article. Like, where do you feel like the guidances are coming from? Or do you feel like there are guidances, like in your school and life?
Where are they coming from? I mean, I guess they're coming from the CDC, and the article was talking about how soon the CDC will make an announcement for what is recommended. So I think that's what my school works from. But it seems like there's some leeway within that, because certainly schools do. I mean, the school where I used to be was much more protective of the kids anyway, last year than my new school was. Their relative approaches kind of flipped. My school where I am now was much more cautious and then became much less so. And my old, anyway, it doesn't matter. The point is, it seems like it's coming from the CDC. Honestly, like, I have so many other things that I have to attend to when I'm teaching that I'm not scouring the rec. I'm just, and I honestly have no choice, you know, like whatever the school says, that's what I'm doing, you know, within the confines of which obviously I can choose, for example, whether to mask, but I can't make my students mask if they say it's not required. So I guess that's where it's coming from. To be honest though, over the course of this period, it's been so overwhelming that I just, I don't do a lot of my own research. I just am like, well, fuck it. Whatever they say is what I have to do. So, you know, and also I know that they're reputable enough. And so, you know, they're not just completely making up stuff on their own, but, you know, yeah, that's where I perceive that it's coming from. CDC, and then whatever's left up to interpretation, whoever's in charge, the people that are in charge of the schools, which interestingly at my new school seems to be the, well, there are nurses, there are plenty of nurses, but they're also, you know, the CFO, the chief financial officer makes the calls. I'm just like, okay, I don't know, you know. Yeah, it's an interesting setup. And then of course the families all have different opinions and they all do different things. And I actually felt like my families last year, even though they had different approaches, and some families sent their kids in without masks the instant it was allowed, and some kids had their kids masked throughout the whole rest of the year. They had very different approaches, but I found them to be all very respectful of me, respectful of the school's decisions. Usually you can tell when kids are being fed like kind of polarized approaches to subjects, because the kids will come to school and talk about them. And none of my kids really did. Like, occasionally someone would, I heard from a different, I heard from kid A's parent that kid B was saying to kid A, why are you still masking? You don't have to mask anymore. But that was kind of as mean as that's not even mean. That's kind of as intense as it got. And obviously we had conversations in the classroom about, you know, this is a family choice and different families make different, just like you do about everything. And we are going to respect each other's choices. And I kept wearing a mask, so I felt good that was a good model for the kids, that, because they were in the minority. The kids that masked were in the minority by the end, that masked consistently. And so I felt good to be able to be a role model for them, so they didn't feel like weird or bad.
You had mentioned earlier how the kids being masked changed their way of interacting with each other. And I'm curious, how you spoke a little bit about it just now, but how that sort of carried forward, or how you think that will carry forward. How has that has have they gone back? Is it just like the kids are behaving just like before they masked, or has it had some lasting effect?
Do you mean, are do the kids that I have over the course of the year, did the kids that I have, did their behavior once they were unmasked change from when they were masked? Is that what you mean? I don't know the answer to that because, I have 20 students and there's so much going on. You're kind of like, I would need to really closely observe. I will say, to really be able to answer that question in a way that felt accurate. But I did feel like there was an awareness and there was like a explicitness in the way that we would talk, because we have constant meetings as a class about how things are going and what we need to work on and what maybe is not, So like the kids were aware that once they could see each other's face, because we, talk about behaving in ways that work for ourselves and work for others in our community. And so they would talk about the fact that, well, like early in the year, they would talk about the fact, well, I don't really know because he's got a mask on. I don't know. And later in the year, which maybe sometimes they just make up stuff to like, move the focus, but it also is true. And later in the year, they were talking about that, and about the fact that they could see each other's faces and that, and we could have better conversations. Like, when you're doing that and you look at Daniel's face, like, how does it look like he feels? Like, we could have better conversations of that nature. Whether and like I'm thinking of one particular kid who did have a pretty significant journey last year with regard to using his body to give messages to others. And he made a ton of progress, like an astonishing amount of progress. My experience is that when you have someone who really struggles with that, you probably will see some progress during the year, but really it's a process that takes years, not just one school year. So the point is that this guy made like striking progress, and I wonder to what extent his parents were also very engaged. We like had a lot of very intentional kind of and cohesive team effort with him and including him in the whole thing. But it's true that over the course of that time, people took their masks off. So I don't know the answer. I don't really know which element really helped him, but I would imagine that that did help him.
I'm wondering what else has changed, or I guess sort of half carried over from the pandemic way of teaching. Like, were other things instituted other than masks, and sort of how did they carry on in the classroom?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, certainly, like last year. So, the year before, the first year of teaching in the pandemic, full year, a lot of people use Seesaw. Do you know this app for kids to do school online? And I definitely use it at my old school to some extent, but not nearly to the extent that some people did, and not nearly to the extent that my new current school used it in the pandemic. So last year, as the year unfolded, I mean, we never had any full class quarantines in my class, which was very lucky because some classes did last year. But I did have kids that would go out for different amounts of time, and I would have to provide an online plan for them, which would involve different types of elements, including Seesaw. But then I noticed that, and I understand why it's, I'm not, I personally am not a huge fan of doing a lot of like online learning. I'm coming from preschool, and I like physical materials and creating with actual touchable things. That being said, where I work now is a lot more academic, but I still work in kindergarten. But my point is that I'm never going to be like someone who's doing a lot of Seesaw if I don't need to. That's just not my style. I just feel like there are better uses of time. But I would notice that a lot of teachers last year would still continue to use Seesaw in the class. And there are some things for which it was pretty cool, but sometimes I just am like, why are you people are using Seesaw more than I feel that they should. I don't care what they do, but my point is that it's carrying on. So yeah, I don't know. So now are we doing like people, I don't have to do that where I work, but are people going to be, is now Seesaw just like normal part of teaching, which it never was? And if so, that's kind of sucks. In my opinion, I'm not saying I no, never like it, but for the most part, I just feel like there's always a better way to do it. The other thing that I notice, sorry, my upstairs neighbor is blasting WBLS. You probably can't hear it, but it's very distracting. And I love WBLS, but it can make me lose my train of thought. But the lunches, I don't know if you're, I imagine you might be familiar with the fact that like during lunch you weren't allowed to talk. And so we would do things like, well, at my old school, we would listen to audiobooks. At my new school, it's much more tech saturated, the environment. And so we have those like projector things, so we could watch stories, So sometimes we would still listen to stories, but it was such a stressful year, and I was so completely overwhelmed. And it was just kind of like the culture of this of all the kindergartens was that they would watch stories. And there are some really great, meaning read alouds. So you're seeing the pictures of the books. You're not watching a cartoon or a live action or whatever, but it's still a video, it's a video of the book. And so we started that in the beginning of the year because they were not allowed to talk at all. And then as things loosened up, they were allowed to talk, and they were not required to sit as far apart as they were originally were. But I did find that I continued to put them on. Those stories, I mean, it was kind of like the ritual of our classroom and like young children routine, and that kind of is really, really helpful. But I did feel a little bit bad about it because I feel like they should just be talking and figuring out how to exist in the world without staring at a screen all the time. But I will say that it was quite useful at times as a teacher to use that. So yeah, I wonder if that's going to continue. I personally, like, I don't, I honestly, I haven't made a plan, but I don't feel good about continuing to do that all the time because I just don't think it's ideal for them. But will I continue to use it at times? Probably, yes, because it is helpful. I like that. Honestly, I like that better than I like doing learning activities on Seesaw. That's just me. I'm trying to think what else. Well, there was the fact that, we had these initial parent conferences at the beginning of the year. And those used to always be in person, and they were on Zoom. And that we might continue doing, actually. I think parents really liked that. And it was fine for us. And in a way, kind of, you know, in a way, slightly more manageable, like slightly less stressful to do them on Zoom. So I wonder if we'll keep doing that. Yeah, I think I can't think of anything else right now. Some schools I know stopped singing. They stopped singing in the pandemic because, you know, when you sing, like when you're talking, more possible droplets are coming out of your mouth. I never stopped singing because I do a ton of music as part of what I do, and I cannot imagine doing my job without singing. But I know that some people didn't, so I wonder how that will go for them. But yeah, that's not really relevant to me. I'm just thinking about things that were different, but I just kept singing with my mask on and not telling anybody that I was doing it because I needed to do it. We needed to do that.
I want to hear about that. I know you make music and you sing, and I want to hear about how that's progressed or changed since last time.
With regard to what I do in the classroom or just in my life?
In your both.
Okay. I guess in the classroom, I'm not really... As I said, like I kind of just kept doing exactly what I've always done because it's such a backbone of the way that I work that even though some people would tell me that they didn't sing because of those reasons, I just never stopped. At my old school, they did tell us we weren't supposed to, and I kept doing it. So I don't really know that that has changed. Although it was certainly, you know, I implemented actually at my new school, I implemented a kindergarten sing, meaning we didn't have that before. And I started it because it's something that I love to do. I love to, not so much as like a music learning experience, but as a community building experience with groups of children get together and sing. And that's kind of outside of what I do as a songwriter. The rest of my life, it's just, anyway, I something that I feel is very, very meaningful. And you know, there were having a mask on for that was definitely not that great. It's hard, you know, it's very, very hard to project to like a room of 105-year-olds. Yeah, I'm hoping that we won't have to do that anymore. I won't feel like it was, as I said, it was optional to wear a mask, but I did, and it'll be great to not have to do that. With regard to my, if it ever happens, I mean, who knows what's going to happen? I got an email from my doctor's office about monkeypox today, just kind of like, you know, like a download of like all of the things, because that's the kind of doctor office that I have. And they've sent those out periodically in the pandemic all the time, and about the development of the different strains. And, you know, they make mention of the fact that, I mean, of course, and I think that article in the Times also, it's like, we don't know what's going to happen. Like the thing's going to keep mutating. We have no idea. So, but in my life outside of school, what's been really fun lately is that I have played a couple of shows for the first time. And since the pandemic, I did do some online shows during the pandemic, which was pretty fun, actually. Like in the acute lockdown part, my daughter and I, we would be in our apartment in Bed-Stuy, and we did some online performances through Jalopy Theater, which is, oh, you know where that is, because it's down the street from that school. We perform there a lot. in regular life. And so through them, we did some online shows, which I was horrified at the idea of doing, but it was actually pretty fun. And recently we went back to play there again for the first time since the pandemic. And it was really, really fun. It was so fun, to be there and to, just to have that experience again. Yeah. For the first time in 2 years. And then I have that's a kids music project that I do. And then I have a grown-up music project that I used to do a lot more earlier in my life, but I still do some. And I played a show of that also recently at a Kids Candy store in Williamsburg, which is just like a tiny little venue. It's so perfect if you don't have a large fan base, which I don't, because it's so small and it always sounds good. It just was really amazing to be able to do that. Yeah. My drummer, who has not, when I say my drummer, I don't actually own her, but she is a good friend of mine who usually plays with me. And she was not able to come. Her mom was in the process of dying. So I haven't played with her since pandemic, but I actually, my kid's dad played with us. He played the drums, and that was really fun because we actually hadn't played together since he and I split up. And that was really fun, actually. So that was felt really, really good to be able to do that. And in fact, I've been booking a couple more shows for the fall coming up, which I'm excited about. Yeah.
Yeah, I wanna pivot more towards your life and sort of how you think it's changed. Like, how has your relationship to music changed over the pandemic? I know a lot of people have talked about sort of their relationship to time changed.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, honestly, like even yesterday, like when I got back from my trip, which was an amazing trip, I got back, like, I don't know, the planes were all messed up. So I got back like at 2 in the morning. And then I had like stomach problems in the night. So I didn't wake up until like 1 or 2. I don't know what time. It was very late yesterday. Point is that I was super like confused, you know, and you know, it was partly just coming back from being in another country and speaking a lot of Spanish and being suddenly being back here and my daughter's at camp and what is happening? Who am I? You know, which was kind of about the trip and like, oh, now I'm in August and school is going to start again. And oh God, what's going to happen? It's a hard transition as a teacher. But also I felt like yesterday, like my kind of emotional state, which was heavy in a certain way, was about the whole past 2 years, you know, and just being like, exactly, I guess, about time. Like, what is going on? What in the hell is happening? Just has been happening. Like, where do I live? What I have a different apartment. This is my third apartment, and since, as I said, since we started these interviews, I work at a different school now. My kid in the pandemic also, I had to get my kid into high school because the school that she was at where I used to teach ends after middle school. And so we had to go through this ridiculously challenging process of like figuring out where she should go to high school, but in a setting in which you couldn't visit any of the schools because it was still intense pandemic. And also at a time when we thought she was going to go to public school, but the public schools were in such a mess when we were applying that we applied to private schools as well to see what kind of financial aid she could get. Anyway, the point is that she ended up in a private school, which was not our plan, but it's turning out good. She loves it. And they gave us a financial aid. my point is that now my kid go just like, what is happening? Who am I? What is it that I'm doing with my life? Yeah, basically. And so in that respect, also like the financial, I feel like what I actually, you know, like my where I work now, I am paid better than I was at my old job, even before the pay cut, which is great. And I feel like I still have a big, massive mess of detritus left over from how stressful it was, you know, to have that pay cut and then to renovate this apartment and all the loans that I don't know what is going on. And basically I need to like, look at, I feel like I've just landed, you know, from this very tumultuous passage on a ship. And you're never actually have landed, obviously, but that's just how I felt yesterday. I'm like, what is going on around here? Like, what can I do? Like, I need to like look around me and see what is going on. I don't know. Does that make any sense? Meaning like I just have this acute, like, or not acute, like general feeling of like having gotten through something. Oh, also my dad died in the middle of all this. My dad died at the beginning of last school year. Like, you know, just so many things and just not really understanding that it's only been 2 years. It's been exactly 2 years since that big pay cut and all of the different things that I've done and that have happened in the big world and in my small world. And like, what is life? Yeah. Basically. So I think, yes, I identify with the idea that my relationship to time, my understanding, I've definitely been feeling like I've been like struggling to keep my head above water, you know, on all these different levels, in a way that I certainly never had earlier in my life, the last 2 years, just because of all the different, you know, in addition to the pandemic and what's been going on politically in our country and the world, just all the different things in my personal life that kind of all were kind of stirred up in that same kind of massive mess. Yeah. But it's not bad. You know, it's like a lot of these things, I'm so happy. Like I'm happy about where I am now, even though work-wise, even though last year was really an incredibly hard year and we shall see how it goes this year. But I regardless of what I end up doing later, I'm happy about where I landed for now. I love my apartment. I'm so glad that my kid is happy where she is in high school now. You know, it just feels overwhelming and just confusing. Yeah, like astonishing, all the different things. I think I'm just repeating myself over and over again.
Well, thank you. Yeah, thank you for that. I like your question of sort of what am I doing? I think that I'm curious how you feel with that sort of shock of reflection that you described, sort of with in terms of this oral history project. Like, what has it meant to you to sort of do these interviews? Have you have other places to reflect or?
No, that's such a good question. And I also want to say that in the context, I think also, because you asked about music, I just want to say that there's a part of the last 2 years when that have been so much about like just trying to survive, you know, and trying to like keep up with the constantly changing demands as a teacher and then as a parent and as a person and blah, blah, blah. That really music, I just was like, what's that? I don't really do that. Like, there's no way I would. I mean, obviously I played in the classroom. That's like a survival thing. It's like the way that I play in the classroom is essential for doing that job for me. But like the other part of my music, it I remember I talked about in another interview that I actually what I started doing was learning not a ton, but several cover songs. Like there was no part of me that was available for writing any songs or for like giving a lot of attention to that part of myself. And so there was a feeling also of having regained or reclaimed or rediscovered, even having a enough space in myself to go and play a show. Not just that you could actually go into a theater and do it, but that I would even have even anywhere near that amount of like psychic energy or space in my awareness to do that. So that is that has actually that is huge for me. That I feel like I didn't say before and that feels relevant. With regard to these interviews, I mean I yeah I've said a few I've said on a lot of them that I there were definitely many moments when we were scheduling these interviews when I just was like, oh God, I cannot schedule anything. You know, like this isn't, I was like, I can't do it. It's so hard. And people on the Oral History Summer School like would write to me several times because I just would never sign the forms and whatever, and I just couldn't keep up. But the fact is that whenever I would land here, I was so glad to be here because there was no other place to put there was no other place that I processed this in this specific way. And I also lost my therapist of literally 23 years over the course of the pandemic. I didn't, she didn't die, but she quit. She was like 82. I mean, she was allowed to do that, but it was bad. It was bad timing for me. The point is that even before I had therapy, you know, whatever, obviously it's a different setting, but then I didn't have, then I also lost that. And the questions have been really, really useful. And having this place and and also the rhythm of it, where it was every, I don't know how many months it was, every 3 months, or I have no idea, 5 months, to kind of just come back to one of y'all and be asked these questions and to have the space to just keep talking. I really like, this is the first time that I've participated in one of these, but I really like how y'all like ask these questions and then you just don't say anything. And I know that's part of, you know, you have to do that because this is an oral history. It's not a conversation, but there's something like really spacious about it and invite. There's something about the structure of it. Maybe it's like Freudian analysis, which I never did, but you're just like talking. And sometimes I do feel like I'm just circling. And right now I am very distracted by WBLS, but sometimes I feel like I go places and I discover things that I don't think that I would in a conversation. You know, this is not really a conversation, not a normal conversation. Yeah, it's definitely provided a space and an intention to this huge part of my life as an educator in COVID, and one that I haven't had anywhere else. You know, I haven't had anywhere else. Obviously, I have educator friends and we talk, but again, this is not really a conversation. It's a different kind of a opportunity to reflect. And I really, really, really valued it, even when I've been stressed out about scheduling another thing, you know, and especially when I was on Zoom all the time and losing my mind with that, like most people were, I still, I always really, really have been grateful for the through line of these interviews.
I'm curious what you think we have in the archive. Like what you'd be curious to hear other educators say, or what you think you've made with all these interviews.
I would prefer never to hear myself speak. So I would never, that would make me feel so self-conscious. And I just, ever since, yeah, I just would prefer not to ever hear that. But what would I want to? I have, you know, I have definitely wanted to it would be amazing to hear some of the other educators talk, and I haven't. And honestly, if there's been opportunities for to do that, I've missed those emails. I know that there were like some gatherings early in this, and maybe they've continued, I don't know. And I was not able to pull off showing up for those, but yeah, I mean, I guess I would be super interested to hear people reflecting, or maybe not. I wouldn't listen to their entire interviews, but I would be super interested in hearing parts of different people's interviews. And I would actually love to hear, certainly from people that work in different settings from me, and also from people that work in similar settings, but not mine, because we have been very like, and that's a kind of a hard thing about being a teacher. You're kind of like in this weird, isolated, unless you make a lot of effort, you're kind of in your little bubble. And a lot of times without even any grownups, you know, because you're just with all these children, just like trying to survive and get something done. So I can at time, you know, and then when you do talk to other teachers, at least if they're the ones in your school, it's often like, again, like a desperate push to like survive, you know, like what should we do? You know, so it's not really a space, at least in my experience, of a lot of reflection, because you're just anyway, yeah, kind of running. So I would love to hear that from other people. Yeah, definitely.
Well, I wanted to ask, this is a question that I've been asking everybody, but it's what do you think that you'll forget about like the past 2 years in like 10 years? Like, what's the, like a specific thing that you think will just be sort of lost to history unless you preserve it now?
Sorry, I'm really distracted by the music. You know when the song comes on and your brain just can't stop trying to figure out what the song is? I'm having that. So what would it be? I think just like, I don't know. I mean, I don't think I'll ever forget like the way, like my first group of parents, like everyone was so traumatized. And I was actually teaching 2-year-olds when the pandemic first started. And those families, some of them were very kind, but a lot of them were so taking out their pandemic anguish on us as teachers, you know. And but you're asking me, and I don't know that I'll ever forget like how incredibly hard it was, you know. I think like the first full year of teaching, so 2020, 2021, and how scared I was about getting the virus, you know, like before there was any vaccines, and before, you know, and we had kids coming back to school who were still testing positive, and I was like, how is that? Anyway, then it turned out that that's very common and they're not contagious, but it was very, very scary. I was super scared. And I'm trying to think what I think I'll forget. I mean, I guess just like something about like the feeling of of always having a mask on. I don't know. I hope that I'll forget that. I'm afraid I can't really answer your question. I can't, I just can't, I'm not really sure at this point what I'll forget. I mean, I hope that I forget how to work seesaw. I hope that I forget how to, teach, 20 kindergarten or 19 kindergartners in the classroom, and then also, provide like a online program for one kindergartner, make this this Google Doc that I have to send out to all the specialist teachers, and then remember to meet with that kid online and get their writing and, try to show some kind of response to their, I just would really like to forget that. Cause that was really, really miserable. I'd like to forget also, like when we were on Zoom all of the time, I felt like I had a weird physiological response, like really, like, and I remember Googling this because I was like, is it, I'm like very sensitive sensorily. I really relate to those kids who like, I mean, I don't really hit people in general, but like who become like overwhelmed with sensory and just like, you know what I mean? Like it's like how I am right now with this radio station that I love. It's so hard for me to really concentrate, but so there, I was researching like highly sensitive sensory people, like how, what it does to be on Zoom. And of course nobody knows anyway, because nobody had been on Zoom for that intense of a time, but that was horrible. I really would feel almost like I was tripping, not in a good way. Like, but my attention, like there was something about the intensity of all the children on Zoom and the amount of energy that I would try to give to them, to try to be engaging, to these very young children, especially because it was two-year-olds. The beginning of the pandemic, I was teaching two-year-olds on Zoom. And I would feel physiologically completely disorganized and exhausted in a way that I couldn't even understand. Like I felt like my eyes would be closing, like I was sick. I hope I forget that, because it was bad. Yeah. I don't know if I answered your question, but I tried.
That's a beautiful way to answer that question. What you wish you'd forget.
Yeah.
So we're almost at an hour. I wanted to thank you again and ask you, do you have sort of any ongoing final thoughts that you want to put in this interview?
No, I feel like I've said it. I just that I have been grateful for this time and space, and the kind of steady kind of like methodical creation of this space for these questions and listening, and like I said, just the kind of open time to reflect, because it there was no other way that I would have had this, so I feel very lucky to have had this time with y'all. So thank you.
Well, thank you. I'm gonna end the recording, but stay on the call. All right, thank you.